Good morning. Welcome to the Roundtable in our Book Pick segment. It's a highlight of our week when we get to talk to two wonderful booksellers from two wonderful bookstores to tell us about wonderful books on their store shelves. We have quite the duo this morning. We welcome Phil Lewis from Bennington Bookshop in Bennington, Vermont. Hello, Phil. How are you?
Good morning, Joe. I'm well, thank you.
Really wonderful to have you, as always, sir. We also welcome Matt Tannenbaum from the bookstore in Lenox, Massachusetts. Hello, Matt. How are you?
Joe, nice to see you. Nice to be here. I'm well, and I trust you are as well, and nice to meet Phil. Lovely to be here with you guys.
Excellent. Wonderful to have you, and I thank you so much for being here. All right. Matt, why don't we begin with you? Give us, where would you like to start?
I have a book called The Prisoner of Lies, America's long Jack Downey's Cold War by Barry Wirth. Jack Downey was a 21-year-old Yale graduate in 1951 who missed World War II, the excitement and the adventure and the patriotism of the war. So he, when the brand new CIA came recruiting at Yale in the spring of 1951, he signed up, and he got to Japan and volunteered to do a mission over China where they were going to pick up a guerrilla fighters there, and he got shot down, and the government refused to acknowledge that he was who he was, and he stayed in a Chinese prison or a number of Chinese prisons for 21 years. And this, I heard about this guy because a friend of mine wrote a book about a intelligence agent operative who had gotten shot down over China during the Vietnam War and spent 10 years. And I thought that Charles McCary, who wrote the book The Last Supper, took his information from this story about Jack Downey. Turned out he took it from someone else. But so I started reading this book, and I became ensnared in the ensnared.
Well,
right there at home, by the history of the Cold War. Of course, I grew up in the middle of the Cold War, and I knew a bunch about it, and I read a lot of espionage novels, mostly by McCary, but this gave me a new insight into how the governments worked, both the American government, the European governments, and helping out. UN, Dag Hammarskjöld came to try to get his release in the 50s, and the Chinese government. So it was a fascinating book. I just read it right through. I love this book.
The new book is Prisoner of Lies, Jack Downey's Cold War by Barry Wirth, and published by Simon and Schuster. All right, Phil, you're up.
Okay, I've got a real treasure here. Tell Me Everything by Elizabeth Stratt. Well, Lucy Barton meets Olive Kitteridge, and they get on surprisingly well, although Olive is initially critical of Lucy. Lucy wears mismatched socks, for goodness sake. But Olive has mellowed with age, and soon they're sharing stories. Pointless stories, it has to be said, so, of course, Olive does. What's the point of that? She asks Lucy, after Lucy tells her of a chance encounter on a train. But, as another blast from the past, Bob Burgess says later in the book, it's just life. That's all it is. Life. And that's what Tell Me Everything is about. Life. The clutter, the mess, the heartache, the muddling through. Also beautifully observed by Stroud, her deceptively simple prose is weighted with rich meaning. She brings back most of the characters from her previous books. There's Lucy and Olive, of course, and William, Lucy's former husband, and Bob Burgess and his brother Jim. We learn a little more about each of them as they struggle with the day-to-day crises of living, with themselves, with their partners, with their friends and neighbours in the small town of Crosby, Maine. There's so much to love in this book. Love for individuals, of course, but love of people and of life. Stroud gets it. This book is just about perfect.
Agreed. It is about perfect. It's just a wonderful, very enjoyable, funny Lovely, lovely read. Tell Me Everything. We had her on, I think, 2 weeks ago on the book show, which is available online. And she's just marvelous. Yeah. It's a really terrific.
So she keeps bringing the same characters. And
It's like this, a world that grows, a cast of characters that grows. The website, I think it's the PRH website, they have a kind of a cast of characters, a list of how the characters are mingle with one another, and it's very helpful
in the different books in the
yeah,
in
I don't even know if it's in the book.
I mean, the characters in that book character in that book.
Yes, it's really fun.
Elizabeth Stroud, excellent,
very cool,
super,
really good stuff. All right, Matt, your turn.
Phil says he reads only good fiction.
Yeah. Well, we try not to read crappy fiction. Yeah.
So I only have one piece of fiction on my list. Oh, no, two. I want to stay with nonfiction. I have the Green, Our Green Heart is my next choice. The Soul and Science of Forests by Diana Beresford Kroger. Do we know anything about her? Have you come across her show?
We don't. Hopefully you do.
She's a Canadian living in, I think, Windsor, Ontario, in her mid to late 80s now, I think. She was, her life story is that she was orphaned early. Her English father and her Irish mother both died, and she was raised in her mother's Irish village and learned the Celtic secrets of the forest, the Druidic secrets of the forest. And she is a biochemist, she's a botanist, and she's also a poet. I first came across her when I started reading The Overstory by Richard Powers.
Yes.
I don't think she gets mentioned in or alluded to in Powers' book, but this is how we started finding out about Diana Beresford Kroger. So in this book, it's a kind of last plea to the people on the planet to understand what the forest means. The forest is the lungs of the planet, the carbon exchange and the oxygen exchange, and then in each of these chapters she reaches out she talks about the different trees and the different parts of the forest, and it's just a lovely. You can read one chapter and close your eyes and drift off into the sense of what it means to live on the earth. Diana Beresford Kroger is just a lovely. This book is published by Penguin Canada, Random House Canada Random House, and I didn't even know it was coming out. I just found it on a list about a month or so ago, and we've been selling it very well.
Our Green Heart, The Soul and Science of Forests. All right. Matt, thank you. Phil, you're up.
Okay, more fiction from me. Kate Atkinson's new book, Death at the Sign of the Rook. There are a few familiar characters in this book, including Jackson Brody, the private detective. This time he's on the trail of an art thief, but somehow finds himself caught up in a whodunit murder mystery play staged at Burton Makepeace, a crumbling former mansion long past its glory days. So it's got all the elements of a classic murder mystery. Also familiar is Kate Atkinson's wry observation of the everyday, her dry wit and her tongue-in-cheek humour. I laughed out loud at many of the book's irreverent scenes. It was just so much fun to read and so tightly written. Atkinson portrays so much with such economy of words. This book was a real delight.
Kate Atkinson, I've read like one Kate Atkinson book and I loved it. And why I don't read more, I don't know.
So she has the Brody series. Is it Brody or Brody?
Brody.
Brody. And then there are other books that are not part of that.
Yeah, one-offs, right?
Right.
Yes.
Yeah. And you're a great writer, but I have not done. I mean, there's always time.
There's always time. There's later this afternoon.
You were just telling us that.
All right, Matt, go.
Fiction? You like fiction?
Yeah, I do.
You ever hear of Richard Powers?
Oh, this one's a good
one. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that's a good one, too, isn't it?
Playground, the new Richard Powers. We only found out about this because I don't pay attention to the new ones coming out, as I should have, just late in August. Playground.
I'm sorry, what does that mean? Shouldn't you be paying attention to that?
Yes, I should be paying attention, but, you know, I'm busy reading Kate Atkinson while I'm supposed to be looking at the new catalogs. So, you know, we love Bewilderment. We love the Overstory. I have loved Richard Powers' books since the mid-80s. His first book, Three Farmers on the Way to a Dance. I don't remember that Three Farmers had much of a kind of what I like to call a hump that he makes you get over before you begin the narrative. He did that in The Overstory, certainly. He did that in Bewilderment, and he does it here. In Overstory, he had, what, 9 characters or 11 characters who you have to meet, who you will meet, and they don't know each other in the first half of the book, but then they all get to know each other later. In this one, they get to know each other pretty quickly. There are 4 major characters in this one, and this is a book. Kirkus, did you read the Kirkus? I read the reviews sometimes.
All right, that's good.
You know what Kirkus said?
What did they say?
It's a challenge.
This book is a challenge? This,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I think they were like, you know, girding themselves for another Richard Powers book. But the Guardian review was, this book is pure magic. And this book is a book about it's about friendship, about these two guys in the mid-century who bond over computer games kind of thing.
Yes.
And then
they're in college. They live different lives, and yet they try to find their common ground.
Right.
And they have a falling out.
But the book, the dedication to the book is he says to Ray Ray. With 750,000, no, make that 1,000,000 thanks. And I love a dedication like that. That tips you off to where the author's heart is. And that's why I love Richard Powers.
Yeah. Some terrific work in there and just a beautiful, beautiful depictions of the sea and a fascinating technology. And I would say, like, there were moments where I was challenged. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't make it that easy for you.
No, sometimes you're like, oh, okay, I'll do that now, or maybe I'll wait till the morning.
So can I tell you that I had a customer once a couple of years ago. I was telling that Richard Powers had a new book out. And this guy says to me, Richie Powers wrote a book? He went to college with him.
Oh, and Richie
was like, you know, not the favorite classmate.
Because
he must have been a little challenged, right?
Yeah,
right.
Well, that's cool. The book is beautiful, though. It's Playground by Richard Powers.
Next up, yes. Women on Platform 2 by Laura Anthony. And this is a sneak preview. The Women on Platform 2 will be released in March next year. And that's a long wait, but something to look forward to.
The women aren't at the platform yet.
Well, they're there every year, according to the book.
Okay.
So Dublin Station, Platform 2, is where travellers board the train for Belfast, and that's significant in this book. Today is a special day, but Saoirse doesn't know it yet, although some things are already noteworthy about the day. She's just found out she's pregnant. She's had a row with her boyfriend, Miles, and she's just been whisked away on a train heading for Belfast, and she doesn't have a ticket. How did she end up here? She'd been stumbling along the street, still fuming over her argument with Miles. Ahead of her, something flutters to the ground, fallen from a scrapbook, clutched lovingly in the arms of an older woman. Saoirse picks up the object. It's an old photograph, worn and faded. Ahead of her, the woman boards a train. Saoirse jumps on after her just as the doors close and the train pulls away from the station. There's the old woman now. Saoirse approaches her and hands her the photograph. It's Dublin, May 22nd, 2023. 52 years exactly since 47 women boarded this very train and travelled to Belfast to buy contraceptives and smuggle them back to Dublin in defiance of the law. The woman with the scrapbook was one of those women. And she takes the train every year on the anniversary of that first trip to celebrate and remember. Each year she shares a story with a fellow traveller. This year, it's Saoirse's turn. This is an uplifting novel, even though some scenes are quite hard. It's a timely reminder of the hard-fought battle for women to have control of their bodies and to make decisions for themselves. How easily those rights are snatched away.
Wow, that sounds really, really good. I'm sorry we have to wait. The Women on Platform 2 by Laura Anthony. The book is published by Gallery Books and will be out in the spring of 2025. All right, Matt.
I have a book that's coming out in April of 2025, but I'll tell you about that in a minute. Okay. This one, Phil, <Yeah. laughs> March, it's nothing.
I've got a May here.
You know, you know, I mean, that's one of the problems, I have to say, just to, in the publishing world, you get all the galleys for the books that are coming out 6, 8, 10 months out.
Yeah.
And so you're sort of living in a time where you're always ahead. And right now I'm reading books February, March, April, and my big thing is trying to, if I read them now, which I try not to, then because when I actually interview the person in April, I don't remember the book, or not as much as I should, but it's okay.
Do you go back and the night before you go that's what happened
I
in that book.
I cram for the exam, right. Sure, absolutely.
So here's one that just came out, I think at the beginning of September. This one is called The World She Edited by Amy Redding. Did you read this one, Joe? Did you have her on the show?
I do not believe I did. No, I
did. This is The World She Edited, subtitled Catherine S. White at the New Yorker. Catherine White at the New Yorker was one of the founding editors, or one of the early editors, in 1925. She, as a young woman, she walked up the steps, to took the elevator up to 45. Fifth Street, I think, is where the office was, and applied for a job, and Harold Ross hired her. But here's how this book begins. I love these first sentences, like I love dedications. Here's the first sentence. She was a major editor at The New Yorker. First sentence of this biography. Catherine Sargent's birth certificate could have used an editor. She was the only child born in Winchester, Massachusetts, on September 17th, 1892, so it's not as if the clerk was busy. But he or she nonetheless recorded her existence as Catherine D. Sargent. Two errors. The Catherine is misspelled, the Sargent is misspelled, and she and whoever the clerk was added a middle initial D for no reason at all. So Catherine Sargent became Catherine Angel first, and she married Ernest Angel, and she had two children, one of whom was Roger Angel. And then she married E.B. White, and the book tells the story of her life and her marriages. But mostly, it's about her editing, and who she edited, and why and how she edited, and brought women to the front in the New Yorker magazine in the 20s. Women like Janet Flanner, Mary McCarthy, Elizabeth Bishop, Jean Stafford, Nadine Gordimer, Elizabeth Taylor, Emily Hahn. Who applied for a job at the New Yorker and was turned down, so she became a journalist and went to China. I don't think she ever met my Chinese prisoner guy. And Kay Boyle. And at the end of this book, Joe, this is a lovely end paper on this book, is a description, because the book is published by Mariner.
Yes, a division of the mighty Random House Corporation.
No, Harper.
Isn't Mariner?
No, Mariner,
Mariner?
Is, Mariner was...
I thought Mariner was Doubleday.
Mariner, that's Anchor.
Ah,
another seafaring
thing.
Ah, right.
That's so you got me.
Mariner was a.
What am I looking at?
The last page, the very last page, the note about the who the publisher is. Mariner was part of Houghton Mifflin.
Oh, there you go. Harcourt too.
And Houghton bought Harcourt.
Yep.
And then Harper bought both of them. And Harper has now reinstated this Mariner line. So Mariner, when I was a young book fellow, was just a paper paperback line.
I remember that. Right? Yes, I remember. And yes, and then they made a big deal when they were coming out with the hardcovers.
Right. Yeah. Right. So this is just a lovely, lovely biography of Catherine White. And of course, you have snippets about E.B. White. Are we running out of time? No.
Well.
So do you know
that Catherine
White was the one responsible for the last line of Charlotte's Web? Remember the last line of Charlotte's Web? Charlotte was a good friend and a great writer. Catherine White was defending her husband against somebody who didn't like what he wrote about something up in Maine. And she wrote, "He's an honest man, honest man, and a good writer." And E.B. White took that and changed it, and that became the last line of Charlotte's Web, a good friend and a great writer.
Slightly passive-aggressive, but very cool.
No. What do you mean?
Phil, go ahead.
Okay. Next up is The Bookbinder by Pip Williams. And in The Bookbinder, Williams returns to the Oxford setting of a previous novel, The Dictionary of Lost Words. This time the perspective is that of Peggy Jones, a young woman who, with her twin sister Maud, works in the bookbinding department of the Clarendon Press.
Yes.
Her job is to fold the sheets of printed pages so that they align in the correct order, ready for binding and trimming. But Peggy is ambitious and wants much more. She longs to attend Somerville College, the prestigious college for women that is a part of Oxford University. But in the class-stratified structure of England in the early 1900s, where women still do not have the vote, her hopes of a college education remain just that, hopes. The onset of the First World War and the mass exodus of men for the front in France opens opportunities for women that they have never had before. Peggy volunteers to help out with the injured soldiers returning from the front, and so gains her first entry to Somerville, which has been recommissioned as a rehabilitation hospital. Here she meets Gwen, a former student at Somerville, and they strike up a friendship. Here, too, she meets Bastien, a Belgian soldier, and they strike up a love. This is a well-written, engaging book which vividly evokes the pressures and the tensions of the times. Williams brings to life the Oxford streets, the fight for survival in the war to end all wars. But it's much more than this. The suffragettes' fight for the right to vote reminds us how far we have come and how much work we still have to do.
The name of the book is The Bookbinder by Pip Williams. All right, 2 minutes. Go ahead.
Great Gatsby is celebrating its 100th anniversary next April. Carol and I went out to St. Paul, Minnesota a few weeks ago, so I thought I'd bring along the Gatsby to read on the trip, and I hadn't read it in 55 years. I loved this book then, and I loved it now, but what I found after I read it, and we might, I think we're going to have a celebration for it on April 10th, 2025, is that I didn't realize the influence that Gatsby had on Jack Kerouac and J.D. Salinger.
Yeah,
Salinger, if you remember in Catcher in the Rye, there's an obscenity that Holden Caulfield sees and is upset about. There's one in Gatsby. And the last lines of Gatsby is something about the dark fields of the Republic. Gatsby looking over the Kerouac looking over the dark fields of the Republic, and Kerouac was all that raw land going, and it was just it just struck me that these two later writers took knowledge from F. Scott Fitzgerald. I also was reading some old F. Scott Fitzgerald and found that he had sent copies of The Great Gatsby to Gertrude Stein and Edith Wharton for their edification, and they both loved it.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Wharton had a comment, and Stein, of course, said, "Well, here we are in Paris, and we've read your book, and it's a good book." And it's a great Gertrude Stein line.
Good words. All right, 1 minute. Go ahead, Phil.
Okay, well, I'll just mention the book I'm reading at the moment. It's the latest by Richard Osman of the Thursday Murder Club books. This is called We Solve Murders. It isn't a Thursday Murder Club, but it is witty, funny, and very intriguing. And I'll review it in full next time.
Excellent. Great stuff. From both of our booksellers, you can find out more information about them by going to our website, wamc.org/roundtable, where we have the book list posted. You can also go to their websites, bookstoreinlenox.com for the bookstore in Lenox, and benningtonbookshop.com for Bennington Bookshop in Bennington, Vermont. Kind of.
Yes, Joe.
Yes, all makes sense. But again, bookstoreinlenox.com, benningtonbookshop.com. Phil Lewis, Matt Tannenbaum, you're the best. Thank you very much for being with us. Be well.
Thank you, Joe.
Thanks, Joe.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.